Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. It is the spring equinox as we go out on the air. Today I'm joined by my wife, Wendy, and she's been on the show quite a few times before, and it's always a wonderful show when she's with us. And our theme today is time and eternity. How do we live in a way that is timeless and whole and infinite while in the midst of the seeming passing of time and the sense that we are definitely finite, limited beings? It seems like a conundrum, and yet here we are right in the middle of it. So that's our theme today. So welcome, Wendy, to today's show. Glad you're with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, you often say that you don't think time exists, right? We've heard you say that a lot, and you try and live by that, too. Whereas I'm
well, let's
limited
just get,
to the
go
clock,
ahead and get it out
not.
Of the way. Go ahead, say it.
So, no, but seriously, you think it's at best a construct of our human thinking, right? It doesn't really exist.
That's correct. I do. I think it's something that man made up to put order and to have some understanding. It's like man made up a language or man made up writing, whatever. I think it's really all made up, and then we bought into it. Now we believe it, and so that's how we see our world.
And you know, it's true, isn't it, that we divide things up into sequence moments. And the clock itself, although it was invented in the Middle Ages, didn't really become current, and then important until the trains came along. I think we had to have a way to keep the trains on time. So clockwork and trains go together. And then, with the digital means of measuring time, now we're down to split seconds, or nanoseconds. Mm-hmm. So it's gone from a sense of following the rhythms of nature to being conditioned by by clock time, if you like, which is in many ways quite arbitrary, isn't it?
Yeah, and you could say that, and you could say that about trains, but you've also been on trains that were late because I was on them. I mean, trains,
right.
haven't you?
Yeah, true.
Same with airplanes, and same with that divine timing, that it seems like we are a part of divine timing, are we not? Even in our construct ideas of train and travel and things like that, but even those things have divine timing to them.
Yeah, you make a good point, and that is what you're saying is the timeless is always breaking through, right? It's always reminding us. So when we're stuck in traffic, or when the train or the plane is not on time, or it's taking longer to get there, then that's God's little reminder, that you think you're in some kind of a structure, but give it up, buddy. There's something more expansive going on here, right? And normally, right. though, if we're into clock time very much, we get antsy and angry because I'm not going to be there on time, whatever that means, and I'm not going to be able to fulfill all my commitments. So in a sense, we're slaves, aren't we? We become slaves of this of the clock, of time itself.
Well, I guess some of us, yes.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, we talked about this subject on the show before. You know, the fact that I'm a timely person, whatever that means, and you're more flexible with time. But I think it's been helpful for me to see that it all works out. You know, when I think, oh God, we're going to be late. You know, we rarely are. It always seems to unfold in the right and perfect way. But I also subscribe to the fact that, you know, there is no time, too, in reality, that it's simply an inconvenience. It's when a convenience becomes, a absolute necessity that you know, we see it as reality. I think it's sad because, then it hampers us, doesn't it? And like language, you know, once we begin to think in words, it's hard to think outside of words. And it's the same with time. Once we buy into time, it's hard to think and conceive of our lives, you know, outside of time. And yet we all do it. I think when you're creating something, when you're involved with something, time seems to stand still. You know, it seems like hours have passed in just a few minutes, perhaps, because there's that sense of timelessness when you're fully involved in something. You penetrate beyond the sequence of time.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's going to be the person that says, yes, maybe it seems like just minutes have passed, but you've gone past that sequence of time. And there's always going to be the person that says, yeah, but what about the clock? It moved. It showed you that time went. And, you know, it does. The clock does move. We're not talking about that, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about something different. We're talking about the black hole in between the molecules, you know. We're talking about the things that really we have truly, I think, conditioned ourselves not to see, and it just, like you said, breaks through every once in a while join in on reminding us that things are timeless.
Well, you know, Einstein was famous for beginning this process of trying to understand what time is, you know, in relation to space, the space-time continuum, and that, you know, it's not a thing in and of itself. It's a result of the way that physics happens in our universe, if you like, or certainly in our solar system. So it's intimately connected to that, but again, that is only on the physical level, right? When we're on a more exalted level, a spiritual level, then we're talking about something that's not conditioned by anything, right? That there's an infinity in the moment, you know, that the moment is unconditioned. It only becomes
not a beginning or an end to it,
right? Right, exactly. It only becomes conditioned when we see that there's such a thing as a beginning and an end. I think this is what hangs us up about our lives, too, because we buy into beginnings and endings. You know, we celebrate the beginnings and we regret the endings, right? We celebrate children. I think somebody said, really, you should cry when the child is born, you know, because the fact that the child is born means it's going to die. So therefore, instead of celebrating it, it's, oh gosh, it left the infinite to come into the finite. And so there's a sad occasion, and then we should celebrate death because that soul's going back to the infinite again. So it's sort of a counterintuitive way of approaching that.
Yeah, and then you get into the body and the body aging and stuff. And really, spirit doesn't age. Spirit doesn't change. And I think, you know, to me, I feel like our bodies are permeable masses, and that we only see them as solid, and that spirit and the life of love of God is surrounding us and is what the energy of life is. It's what and it's what we breathe in and out, and in its purest form, we are then permeable, and therefore even our bodies don't even, we're going in and out of these masses and thinking that we belong, you know, our soul belongs to us, us, you know, well, what is us? You know, where I think that it's, I think of the world as more of a connected spirit, a connected energy of spirit and love, energizing it.
Right. And Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, talked a lot about, you know, turning the body into a body of light. You know, he's very big into this idea of regeneration, which is a similar idea, I think, you know, to move beyond the confines of a finite, solid thing, the body, to this more permeable thing, this more energetic field of life mm-hmm. energy, life substance and intelligence, as the Fillmore said. And, you know, a lot of work's been done over the years in psychology and spiritual psychology about, you know, disidentification, right? I have a body, but I'm not my body. I have emotions. I'm not my emotions. I have a mind. I'm not my mind. You know, what am I? And you come back to that presence that is, again, timeless, limitless, you know, formless in a way, right? But it seems to be present within form.
Well, I think you can move in and out of it just like the infinity symbol. You know, you might be aware of any point you might be on the path, and that you you can move in and out of that if you so choose to.
So therefore, we are, again, not limited unless you insist
see
on
yourself
being,
as
right?
limited.
No. Right. Right, the same with time.
I know in our book study, we talk a lot about linear time versus spiral time, and how it, what does that look like, and you know, how does it work, you know, with each other, and it's an interesting topic. It's an interesting thing to get your head around. You're trying to get your head around.
What do you mean exactly? I think I lost you for 1 second there.
Well, I said it was an interesting thing to try to get your head around that spiral.
All right.
Idea of a spiral versus linear time.
Yes, and of course, there's been many, you know, studies on this as well. You know, spiral dynamics and mm-hmm. Other work, esoteric work on consciousness. The idea that, you know, it's way beyond a linear understanding, and yet we are tied to it. You know, I remember first listening to All Things Must Pass by George Harrison, you know, and the passing of time was and nostalgia was very impactful for me. I think because I've lost a lot of people in my life, and as we all have, but I think the idea of losing another person, you know, losing, There's another strange term, isn't it? So because mm-hmm. where have they gone? You know, are they really lost? They just died. But you know, loss is something that triggers us to want to hold on. You know, I don't want my little life to end. You know, that sort mm-hmm. of thing. And yet, even though we know that every little life, you know, must end. So again, there's the paradox, isn't there? The more we grasp onto it, sometimes the less we can enjoy it, right? Because we are right. trying to force something to stay the same, you know? And I think this works mm-hmm. in a relationship, doesn't it? You know, a relationship, I know it works with our marriage, you know, that, you know, you have to constantly reimagine it. You know, it can become stale if you only see it in a certain way and have to flow with it. And I think that's the same with life in general, you know, to stay endlessly mm-hmm.
And I look at it as it's sort of like a new piece I get to look at. It's a new, you know, it's a new angle. It's a new way, you know, it's a new piece I get to look at. And it's exciting that way. If
right.
you look at the same thing over and over again, then you know, it gets stale.
Right. But you asked me last week.
Go ahead.
I said you asked me last week, I think it was a few days ago, you know, are you cynical or skeptical about everything, about life, you know? And we've just been talking about Don Miguel Ruiz's fifth agreement, which is to be skeptical, to question things. And I think it's a I think it's a healthy thing to be skeptical and to question. The Buddha said the same thing, you know, don't believe me because just because I said it, test it out for yourself. But, you know, becoming totally cynical and world weary, that's a different thing, isn't it? Because then it's like you've seen it all, there's nothing new, don't try and fool me, you know, I know what life is like, it sucks, whatever. And that we don't want to be there because that's the opposite of being open and receptive to, right, to new possibility. And I think, you know, my view on that is I want to remain like a child and, like, you know, full of childlike wonder, but also, you know, cynical, unskeptical.
Well, it's wise
fool,
with
you know?
Discernment. Wise with discernment. It's different from being cynical and I know it all. And it's that's just how it is.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those conundrums, you know, to be open to wonder and yet not naively so, you know, to Jesus sort of summed it up, of course, in the famous quote, you know, be innocent as doves and wise as serpents. So wise to the ways of the world, but not becoming conditioned by that, you know, staying innocent and harmless as a dove, open and receptive to possibility. I think this is the when people say, you know, what does it mean to trust? How can I trust someone? Well, I think you can, you know, not trust them and trust them at the same time, if that makes sense. You know, you're nobody's fool. You're not going to be taken advantage of, but you're also not shut down. You're open to something creative happening. So the trust is there in staying creative, but the, you know, the defense is there in not being taken advantage of. You know, I think
the trust is in that you're living a divine purpose of life, guided by spirit, and therefore you don't have to worry about trusting somebody else. It's trusting yourself, and once you know that you have the divine wisdom that will discern what you need to do, then you will know compassion versus codependency. You will know when to say a healthy no or when to say a robust yes.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, very good. And you know, the inner compass is what guides us there, isn't it? Not making the world safe so I can trust it. I mean, I think... Sri Ramana Maharshi once said, you know, sometimes we want to cover the whole earth with lather, you know, to make it safe for our feet. And really, it's much easier to put on a pair of shoes. And it's the same thing. You know, when we protected ourselves, you know, when we come from our own sense of integrity, we have the shoes on. You know, we don't have to cover the whole world in lather to make it safe.
It's much easier to blame somebody else, you know, than take
not
on the responsibility
lather
for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Take care of yourself and the world will be fine, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great image, isn't it? Because it's kind of insane thinking you can cover the whole world with lather, you know, so your feet could be protected, you know.
Yeah.
It's looking outside of yourself for all the solutions instead of saying, hey, I could take care of myself. I just need to put a pair of metaphorical shoes on, you know.
Yeah. They say that we want to change the world. You know, we want everybody else to do what we want, you know, them to do.
Right.
So, that's like putting the world in leather.
Yeah, it's a good image.
But it's so interesting though, with back to the wisdom part of it is that, you know, you've met a child. I mean, I take yoga from a young lady that's my daughter's age, that's Paul's stepdaughter. Our youngest is 31, and her friend teaches me yoga, and she's probably one of the best yoga teachers I've ever had. And she has that; she is in her divine purpose. She is doing her thing. She's doing what is hers to do here on earth. And when you look at her like that, and then you see a very wise person in that. That doesn't mean that she isn't naive or innocent in other areas, but she is, you know, has a wealth of wisdom because she has opened up her heart to this particular activity and is now sharing it with others. So, which I think is also a very important thing too, as far as wisdom is concerned, is how it flows, that it flows naturally and it's not something contrived.
Right, very good. I'm with Wendy. We're talking about the dance of life, how we dance between time and eternity, between the finite and the infinite, between effort and effortlessness. And I'll talk about that more and read a poem about that when we come back after these messages from Unity. So join Wendy and myself then in a couple of minutes.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with my wife, Wendy, and we're talking about the conundrum of living both in the world but not of it, to live in time, but also to understand that eternity is also right here under our noses. And the fact that there's struggle or effort required, because you can't be a genius on a piano without practice. And likewise, in any endeavor, you have to practice and do some work, some effort. And yet also, in truth, this whole thing is effortless. So to marry the two together is part of our work here. And I think I like the Sufi saying, and you probably heard me say it many times on this show because it's one of my favorites, the thing we seek cannot be found by seekers, and yet only seekers find it. So, you know, it can't be found by seekers, yet only seekers find it. Well, how does that work? Well, you have to have put some effort into it, but don't think the effort itself is what's going to get you there. The effort puts you in the position, but then you have to let go in order to receive it. So the conundrum there, right? And I think any of us who've succeeded in any endeavor, any sports field or musical field, artistic field, technical field, when we're in our sweet spot, when we're in our flow, it's effortless. You know, you may have put a lot of work into it, but when you get there, it seems as if it's happened all by itself, and that's a beautiful place to be, isn't it?
Yeah, that's like a play coming together. You know, you or a song, if you've ever sung in a choir or something, everybody's doing their little part, or played in a band, everybody's doing their little part, and then all of a sudden the symphony comes together and it's like, wow.
Yeah, it's the same idea. And you're a sailor, so you know those moments when you're totally literally in the flow, but also metaphorically in the flow.
Yeah. Well, it's like on, yeah, and physically, it's like if you're if you use your body in its way that it pivots around and moves with effortlessness, or you can slug on the ground and be weighted.
You know, there's two great paths, it seems, in world religions, you know, two great ways of approach. One is the sort of traditional gradual approach, gradual enlightenment, you know, working in the steps. And then there's the immediate path, you know, of awakening. And they're not mutually exclusive. I think, for instance, in Buddhism, you know, have lots of paths that talk about the gradual step-by-step approach. And we're familiar with the various steps that there are in Buddhism, you know, the four noble truths, the eightfold path, the six perfections, the four reminders, on and on and on. And other religions have these grades. Sufism certainly does. Christianity does. If you study Jesuit theology, you know, St. Ignatius of Loyola has these 4 weeks of prayer. They're not just literal weeks. They're four kind of sessions, four approaches to truth. So, you know, that's the systematic way of approach. And yet there's also these paths, you know, that talk about you know, immediate opening, the Maha Mudra Dogchen paths of Tibetan Buddhism, the Satori Kensho, you know, awakenings of Zen. And yet these awakenings come after much, much practice too. So again, the conundrum. But a couple of weeks ago, I was reading a poem in church by a Tibetan master of the non-dual spontaneous immediacy approach. And his name is Venerable Lama Gendun Rinpoche. And his poem is called Free and Easy, a spontaneous Vrajra song, a spontaneous song of the diamond approach of blasting through all the dualisms of life. So I'll read this, and I'll ask you, Wendy, for your input on it, okay? So, happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but is already present in open relaxation and letting go. Don't strain yourself. There is nothing to do or undo. Whatever momentarily arises in the body-mind has no real importance at all, has little reality whatsoever. Why identify with and become attached to it, passing judgment upon it and ourselves? Far better to simply let the entire game happen on its own, springing up and falling back like waves, without changing or manipulating anything. And notice how everything vanishes and reappears magically again and again, time without end. Only our searching for happiness prevents us from seeing it. It's like a vivid rainbow which you pursue without ever catching, or a dog chasing its own tail. Although peace and happiness do not exist as an actual thing or place, it is always available and accompanies your every instant. Don't believe in the reality of good and bad experiences. They are like today's ephemeral weather, like rainbows in the sky. Wanting to grasp the ungraspable, you exhaust yourself in vain. As soon as you open and relax this tight fist of grasping, infinite space is there, open, inviting, and comfortable. Make use of this spaciousness, this freedom and natural ease. Don't search any further. Don't go into the tangled jungle looking for the great awakened elephant who is already resting quietly at home in front of your own hearth. Nothing to do or undo, nothing to force, nothing to want, and nothing missing. Amazing, marvelous, everything happens by itself. It's a lovely poem, isn't it? And it's a tradition of the Tibetan teachings there, at that level, the great perfection teachings of spontaneously generating poems at times, you know, which convey the truth. And this is one of those poems that just poured out of his mouth and has put down as a wonderful song of joy, of ease. What's your take on that?
Well, it is a wonderful song of joy, and it's such a great reminder that we're not, that our little eyes only see so much, and that God's world is so awesome and wonderful, and that all we have to do is open our eyes to that. And you say, okay, well, metaphorically, that's great. How do you do that? What does it feel like? And it is knowing, just the knowing that happiness, for instance, is like he says at the beginning of the poem, it's not something you lose like your car keys. It doesn't just go away to on vacation or something. Happiness is an existence that is within us and that is always available to us. And you know, we had a discussion in our book study once about, I said, you know, reading from a book, and I've forgotten who the author was, that the book said, all you have to do is choose happiness. And there was somebody in the class that said, you know, that's not easy for, you know, that's not possible for all people. And I said, yes, it's not that it's not possible. It's that it might be difficult for one person to understand or grasp this concept, for whatever reason, than other people to grasp it and to hold on to it and see it for what it is. And for happiness to, it doesn't mean that it's not there. It doesn't mean that the concept that happiness is always available. Doesn't mean it's not there just because you can't grasp that. But there's also, I think, that when you do say, you know, I'm resisting here, I'm heavy here, things aren't, you know, running here, what am I to do here? And if you say relax, like the poem says, relax, let go, just know that it's okay, and that it will broaden your perspective, and the missing key or the missing component will be then visible, and you'll be able to utilize that and go with, you know, nudge yourself back into the flow of things.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And this idea of emptiness, I think, you know, it confounds some of us because we think, you know, I don't want emptiness. That doesn't sound good. But what it means is beyond conditioning, right? Where it's empty, right. It's free to embrace everything. Therefore, it's spacious, mm-hmm. like the poem says. This emptiness means that I don't have to cling to any one thing and make it right. Just like we don't cling to time, it's just a construct. And the more we can be in that emptiness, that openness, then when we do need to do things in time, that's fine. But we're not conditioned by them. You know, they're not our master. They're just something that we use. It comes into form, then it moves out of form, but its basis mm-hmm. is empty, right? It's mm-hmm. free. And go ahead.
Well, I was just back with real quick on the emptiness. Is the emptiness has no form. So what if you have an idea that about apples that they're delicious? And if they have to be that way, when you get a sour one, you go, oh, what's this? So if you can remove your identity to that app, to what an apple is, and not judge it, then it has no form. It has no, it's open to other possibilities.
Right. And so it's not that form is wrong. I mean, I think there's some systems that say, oh, you know, form is an illusion. I wish I could just get beyond form, and then I'd find this emptiness, this freedom. And I think that's a misperception, you know, because form is just—it comes and goes. It's not permanent, and yet it is also part of the dance, right? So when you have emptiness, you have form. The Buddha said that form is emptiness, mm-hmm. emptiness is form. I think the mistake we make is to think that form is a thing in and of itself. It relies. And it rises from emptiness, but while it's there, you know, it's maybe illusory, but it has its own relative existence. And I think just in the same way we have a relative existence in this world, it's not like we're just illusions here. We have real needs. If we have suffering and pain in our lives, that's not illusory to us. You know, it's real. And so say, oh, well, that doesn't matter because not then the reality of who you are, you know, could be very hurtful. So there's the dance again, isn't it, is to Emptiness should instill compassion in us, not a sense of, oh, well, don't worry, everything's great because it's all empty. It's the ability to understand, because it's empty, because there's no boundary, that I'm intimately involved with everything and everyone, you know, even the people that I despise. And we talked a lot about this on the show recently, you know, about where we are in our political situation. We're not always going to have leaders that we admire. Some people admire them, but others don't. But the thing is, they are us, right? Even the people we despise the most are part and parcel. There's no boundary between us and them in truth. And so our work is to behold the Christ in them, right? To be compassionate, not to agree with them, but to see that there's a commonality there, that we share something inherently beautiful. And it's sad if they don't see it or we don't see it. But the thing is, we don't blame each other or the other person because we don't see it. We move towards recognition.
Right, and that's what... And that is the first bridge of the to pull people together and to collaborate with each other, is if you stay in the opposing corners, well, that's what he thinks and I think differently, then you never that's that resistive thinking that keeps you from expanding. It's a contracting point of view, and so the first bridge is to move to that compassionate, the hold of Christ in you feeling. And I think it also, it goes back to that trust that we were talking about in the first segment, that if you trust yourself and you trust what the universe, that you have divine wisdom of the universe available to you, then you don't have to resist the other person thinking differently from you. You can relax and listen and expand your view, and beautiful things come of that, because it only takes one side. It doesn't take both sides for things to have a movement again, instead of being dammed up and staying in the different camps of you're right and I'm wrong, no matter if it's a relationship, politics, or whatever. Only dams up energy and does not keeps you from participating in that higher consciousness flow that is collective amongst the world, really.
Right.
In the world.
And I think this works on our spiritual paths too, in the sense that, you know, there's a tendency sometimes when we're in the gradual approach that, oh, I got to get it right. I don't know enough. I got to read this book. I've got to practice that technique. You know, maybe if I work hard enough, I'll get there. But to understand that you're already there, and yet you still need to work on it, you know, still need to remember it. It makes the practice then, the step-by-step approach, much easier, because you realize, okay, you know, I didn't read that particular book. I didn't master that particular technique. It's okay, you know. It's not essential, because the beauty is already within me. And in fact, to realize that, to recognize that, makes practice easier, I think, you know, rather mm-hmm. than the struggle. We don't have to struggle for this. It's naturally mm-hmm. given, right?
Well, there's a difference in between the practice and the struggle. You know, and actually, if you're struggling while you're practicing, you're probably not practicing correctly. You know, you're not in a forward momentum of learning. Let me put it that way instead of correctly. You're just not in a forward momentum of learning, and it's something that telling you to relax. And like the poem said, there isn't anything else here. Just relax and look around you again for maybe a key or a component that you've missed before. You know, and that going back also to the difference in between linear time and spiral time is that is being in the moment. It's just, that's all you have. And it's fleeting. It goes. It doesn't. There is no end. You don't see a segment to each one of your seconds. being present and feeling with all your senses, is what life is about. And to me, it's like it's that fully alive. You get more energy when you're that way.
Yes, exactly.
Less resistance.
So with every blessing, there comes a bit of a challenge, doesn't there? I won't say curse, but a challenge. For instance, if you're on the gradual awakening path, you know, where you're doing step-by-step effort, the downside is to think that, you know, like we said earlier, I'm not there yet. The downside to the spontaneously awakening path is to think that I don't need to make any efforts, you know, that I'm perfect just the way I am, so it's fine, everything's good. Whereas, you know, there may be a lot of inner work that needs to be done that does take effort. And so, you know, it's cheap enlightenment to think, oh, I'm already enlightened, so everything's fine. So, you know, so therefore, I think that, you know, effort is important.
Well, all you got to do is step out in the world, and the world will show you.
Yeah. Maybe you're not fully enlightened.
Yes.
I think many of us have been enlightened on the mountaintop and then walked down into the city and become complete idiots again.
Mountaintop sure does feel good, though.
Yeah, sure does feel good. You know, easy to feel good on your meditation mat, but then you walk out the door and greet
well, what do they say that? Yeah, the longest road is from your head to your heart. So
that's right. Yeah. Or after the ecstasy, the laundry. You know, life goes on. We still got to do stuff. It doesn't always as beautiful as some of our dreams are. And of course, that can be one of the greatest impediments. Got it on the path is to have some kind of a construct of a pure place, you know, a pure land, a heavenly realm, a golden age or whatever. And if I could just get there, you know, away from all my troubles and difficulties, you know, which are conditions of time and space. And if I could get to that timeless place, whereas the truth is that, you know, the timeless place interpenetrates the world of space and time, right? Mm-hmm. So they're not separate. They are one, mm-hmm. and that's huge again, I think.
Well, and if you're looking at, you know, okay, but you have to plan or you have to set goals or you know you have to this or that. Yeah, there's a time and a spot and a space for doing that. I mean, you know, you and I stop and plan out our day or plan out our week or whatever, but that's the moment. That's what we've chosen to do in the moment. And then that's gone. That's done and it's over with and you go on to the other, you know, to whatever else you want to do or need to do or whatever life puts in front of you. You think, well, if there's no time or space, then how are you planning for the future? But it's done in the moment. It's done in the moment, and it's like the co-creating in that. And I think if we looked at that more, we could harness some of the energy that, you know, we could treasure map our future if we put more awareness to planning out and planning just as well as I'm going to the grocery store on Tuesday and the cleaners on Wednesday as that, you know, affirming happiness for your week or affirming to stop and look at nature or to take a walk or to bring to meditate, to bring those things into our lives also, to change our consciousness. It's like changing the heart and the head, you know, it's taking time for both.
Right, yeah. And I often look up in the sky, you know, when I'm trying to drive, obviously. But, you know, we don't want to crash the car. But, you know, to take a look up, and I wonder how many people, you know, remember to do that sometimes, you know, that we're so conditioned to getting from one place to the other that we don't look up, because so often God can be right there. You know, God's creation is all around us, and we don't notice it sometimes.
You have to tell about the hawks the other day because that was such a spontaneous thing that happened. I mean, it was like synchronicity. It was what it was for us. But
right. Yeah, it was a good example of that. And I was thinking of the other day, too. I looked up into the sky. You were tinkering with the gutter, I think, of a neighbor's house. And I looked up into the sky. There were these, you know, they looked like cotton wool puffs in the sky. They're just glorious with the late afternoon sun on them. And I took a photo of them and put it up on Facebook. And it was, you know, wonderful because it was like right there on my ordinary afternoon. We're doing mundane tasks and there's the joy of nature. And, yeah, we were getting in the hot tub a little while ago. And as soon as we got in, there was this mewing like of hawks. You know, the hawks make that mewing sound. And over our heads, we couldn't quite see where they were, but they were careering around two hawks and very excitable. They're very joyous sounds. And then we saw this hawk come in with this amazing aerodynamic power and grace onto a branch. And then just a few seconds later, the other hawk came in onto his back, onto her back, I guess, because they were in the mating ritual. And springtime was coming, and it's time for new hawks. And so, but we thought, man, if we'd been in that hot tub just a little bit earlier, a little bit later, we would have missed it, you know. So we were there by divine timing. We didn't look at a clock and say, oh, the hawks are coming. We just trusted something. We didn't even know until we got out there. But something
but
new that,
we
you know,
had,
that was the time.
That day, I remember we had like said, okay, we'll do this, you do that, we'll do this, do that. Okay, you go there, and we'll meet back. And it was like, yeah, we'll have, you know, this little bit of time together and nature, you know, be out in nature and enjoy our backyard and our hot tub. And it, we were excited about it. And I think it was like a little drop of God's blessing on us, bestowed upon us.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, to see that.
Yeah, you know, we weren't being voyeurs on somebody else's sex life, yeah, folks.
I think it's okay
to watch
hawks, Paul.
But you know, but it was the beauty of it. You know, it was the idea that they are in their conditioning, in their mm-hmm. evolutionary unfoldment. It's time for them to come together. But there was also joy in it because you could tell they were having fun. They were excited. And they were connected to each other. They weren't just automatons going mm-hmm. through a ritual here, going through the motions of something. They were engaged in it. And I like mm-hmm. to think that for all living creatures, you know, that there's a volition and an emotion. I know my dog feels very deeply dreams. And so if a dog can dream, it means it has a rich subconscious life as well as a conscious life. So I think all living creatures have that. So they are both in form, and yet they're formless. They're part of spirit, and mm-hmm. To me, that's beautiful. You know, that's not just about the human family. That it's about every living creature on this planet. And of course, we're slowly, and in fact, not so slowly, destroying nature if we're not careful. So we need to support all those organizations and people who work to protect the environment. And not going to get political about climate change, but obviously it appears to be real. And, you know, 97% of scientists believe it is. So, you know, we have to protect our environment and our world.
We have to use it wisely.
Use it wisely, yes. You know, we don't have to go back to the Stone Age. We want to have all the modern conveniences, but there's ways to do this. And again, this is another subject that is apropos here, you know, that money and prosperity, you know, two different things, right? We see money as limitation sometimes, you know, there's only a limited amount, just as there's only a limited amount of money. But really, there's prosperity and abundance, and that's limitless, just as the infinity that we're in. It expresses through the finite, but is the finite really is only a part of the infinity. So it's not limited, except when we state that it is. So this argument, oh, it's going to cost too much to do whatever to protect the environment, I think is misspoken because, you know, there's an infinity of possibilities. So if you say there's not enough, then there isn't. But Others might say, of course there is, you know, there's plenty to do everything that we need to do to make it right on this planet.
Well, it always seems to work like that. I mean, it seems like if we have a collective consciousness that says, okay, we're going to use our planet and use our resources wisely, which can mean different things for different people. Some that would be too much, some that would be, you know, we're using too much, some that we'd say, well, it's there, we're using it. And so it is a discernment, but it is an attitude towards our earth that of asking permission to be in that flow, to be in part of that life, to work in conjunction with it, versus say, no, this is mine and I'm going to take it. And it's the same thing with money. If you say, no, this is mine and I'm going to take it, or, you know, this is my salary and I only work 8 to 5, or and that's my source. Then that's it. Then that's all you get. Where if the prosperity consciousness says that you ask to be in that flow, you ask to be a part of that, you live from that, that God is your source, and that all things are possible, and then all sorts of avenues of income, for instance, what, you know, open up to you.
Yeah, that's very true. And we see it in people who are entrepreneurs, you know, who started with nothing except for an idea. Well, that was more than they needed. You know, that was the key. It wasn't all the money, because they didn't have any. But the creativity was there. And I feel sorry for people who are conditioned by the fact, you know, I'm on a fixed income, I can't. I'd love to do it, but I can't, and everything. Okay, well, you know, maybe that's true at one level of understanding, but it's certainly not true at the larger level of what's possible for you. And we think of our own movement, Unity, you know, which started with nothing, basically. Charles and Myrtle were very ill people, and from nothing they created this wonderful movement now that's worldwide, and yet didn't do it to aggrandize themselves. They did it in service to humanity, and that continues now for 125 years. So a great example of creating something out of the emptiness, you know, out of the potential into the actual, encourages us in our own endeavors, I think.
Well, it certainly has, and it certainly, I mean, it's they meant for it to be a studied mindset. And a lived from mindset.
Right. And again, unity principles are timeless and eternal, and yet they're also to be practiced in time and on a day-to-day basis. So there's the two coming together again, right? They're not mutually distinct. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a couple of minutes left. A word of wisdom that you want to share with the audience today, Wendy, what's on your heart and mind to share? What do you want to tell?
Well, it was funny. I was sort of going off in a different direction when we were talking about unity, but I'll work back over to that. I had the privilege of being at Unity Village on November 2nd Election Day, and
November 8th, yeah.
Yeah, it was November 8th, Election Day, and did a part of Silent Unity and participated in that, did a 30-minute segment of it. And when in the Silent Unity room, it looks out over the campus, and I sat there and I could feel the years that people had sat in that same area and looked out over that campus and had communed with that higher spirit, and it was an amazing, moving experience. It was like with my eyes I could see it, because I could see change of seasons. It was like I was visualizing that. I was having images of that, and it was an overpowering feeling being sitting in that room, knowing that all the years that people have prayed for Silent Unity in that room. But anyways, it was, it was a pretty wild experience for me to feel feel that power behind it. Words of wisdom, man, expand. Yeah. Choose. I mean, who wants to contract up into a little ball and with a stiff neck and stiff muscles and a frown on your face? You know, there's so much of life to have fun with and love and learn and be open to and to be brave and go ahead and be brave and open up your heart and expand. Think expansively. Yeah. Do the expansive thing.
Good advice. All right. Good way to end the show. Let me tell you about next week. Next week, author, historian, Unity history expert Neil Varley joins me and to share his insights into the Unity movement, the film wars, and where New Thought is going. So that should be fascinating. Join me then. But right now, thanks, Wendy, for being with us as we looked at time and eternity. Glad you were with us today.
Yeah, I'm glad I had the time.
There we go, yeah. Glad you put the time for it.
Love right. you, bye.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
Sometimes life can seem like a jigsaw puzzle. Even if we think we have a clear picture of what we want, we may become overwhelmed in our efforts to fit all the pieces together. Although each of our lives may look different on the outside, what we are all striving to create is the same, peace of mind. We mistakenly think that peace will be ours once we have fit all the pieces of our lives into place. But peace isn't dependent on outer circumstances, and it's not something that must be finished. It's a work in progress within each of us. If I want to picture peace clearly, I look within myself. The peace I've been missing is there. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
What if you were intentional about your life, committed to having more energy and being more vibrant? Join Reverend Temple Hayes, spiritual leader of First Unity at Unity Campus in St. Petersburg, Florida, as she guides you on a journey to an intentional and energetic life. Empower your life and fully express the wondrous energy, love, and joy you hold in your wildest imagining. Joyfully and actively know that more important than what happens after you die is the deeper and enriching concern for what happens while you're living. How can you experience an incredible life right now? Learn how each week on The Intentional Spirit, Seeing and Being, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Central Time, right here on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.